Accession number 10218.
Air Commodore Brothers, Reel 2. You were just telling me about the arrogant captive.
Yes, who was a German pilot whom we shot down, and he landed by parachute near our airfield and was picked up and locked up in the guardroom, pending collection. And when we'd finished flying, we got him over to the mess for a drink. And he asked... he said the Luftwaffe would blacken the skies with aircraft over the next few days and would totally eliminate the Air Force, the RAF. And we actually had him over at our dispersal before we took him to the mess, because we were still on duty, and we got him over to our dispersal hut. And we had to keep a very close watch on our three Polish pilots, because we thought they might jolly well knife him or something. And we'd got a wing of a 109 propped up against the outside of the dispersal hut, and we said, "That's a wing of one of your 109s," and all he would say was, "Maybe." He wouldn't. He wasn't going to give anything away, information-wise.
What had the Polish pilot said, which indicated to you that they might do such a thing?
They just sat in the corner glowering at him. They couldn't understand us entertaining him and giving him a drink, and so on. And I can understand their viewpoint. After all, their country had been overrun, and their wives and families overrun, and so on, living in an occupied country, and they didn't know what had happened to them, whether they were alive or dead. I would have felt the same, I think. But they might have very easily, I think, have had a go at this chap.
Was that the general attitude of Polish pilots during the war?
Yes, they were naturally very tough indeed. They didn't give a damn whether they were killed or anything else. I think a lot of them felt they'd nothing to live for anyway. And their great idea was to kill as many Germans as they could. Which I don't think it would surprise anybody.
So was their attitude that the only good German was a dead German?
Oh, very much so. Mm.
Did you find this with any of the other nationalities?
I think not as much as the Poles. The Poles were very strong in that respect. I think the Czechs, of course, were very similar, but the Poles were outstandingly tough in that respect.
Can you describe any incidents that stick out in your mind from the air combat in the Battle of Britain involving yourself?
One which severely frightened me. I came up after a combat, and we'd all got split up all over the sky as usual, and I was on my own, and I found five 109s in a V formation heading for home, and rather unwisely thought, well, I could stalk up behind them and pick them off. And as I stalked up behind them, I saw that one of them on the outside had obviously seen me, and he turned away from the formation, so I thought, well, I'll just be satisfied with him, and came up underneath him, and as I opened fire on him, all hell was let loose around me, because meanwhile the four I'd taken my eyes off had swung round behind me and proceeded to fill my aeroplane full of holes, which I found rather frightening. And of course, very bad tactics. I should have kept my eyes open for the other four. That was one instant. A more amusing occasion, really, was after a battle over Dover. We got involved with a bunch of Ju-87s who were dive-bombing Dover Harbour and shot down several of them, and some 109s, and were then back at Hawkinge, madly refuelling, and I was sitting in the cockpit. There was no point in getting out, and there was an airman standing on the wing pumping petrol into my aircraft. And meanwhile, the armourers were on the wings rearming the guns and that sort of thing. And the battle was going on ahead, overhead, and I was watching. And suddenly a Spitfire shot down a 109, and this airman pumping petrol in looked up and said, "Ah, we've got one," with great delight. And at that moment a parachute blossomed as the pilot bailed out, and with a look of utter disgust he turned to me and said, "Oh, the jammy bastard." Which was rather amusing. He didn't reckon chaps should get out of burning aeroplanes, obviously, not if they were German.
Any other incidents?
Little odd ones, I think. The other things was really, I suppose, the fact that one got very tired, one got very short-tempered as a result on occasions. Found you were shouted at people in a rather unkind fashion. We went. And I suppose one can perhaps demonstrate how tired one got that I was. We all know one finished about half an hour after dark, and finally had a meal and got to bed. And of course you were up again an hour before first light to get back at Redness, so it meant you only got at the height of the summer got a few hours sleep. And I was wakened up by my batman one morning with a cup of tea, and he took the blackout curtain down and said, "Did you take cover last night?" And I said, "No, why?" And he said, "Well, all hell was let loose. Come and look." And I went and looked out of the bedroom window, and there was a great big bomb crater right outside the officer's mess, and a stick had fallen each side of the mess and down the garden of the mess. And he said the anti-aircraft guns were banging away. I hadn't had a damn thing. I was just fast asleep.
How much support did the British public give you during the Battle of Britain?
Oh, they were very supportive indeed. It was quite extraordinary that, you know, when you got a night off and went off to London to a restaurant or something, somebody insisted on paying for your food or sending you a bottle of wine over to the table and that sort of thing. It's quite incredible.
Do you think they knew what was happening?
I suppose as well as anybody did. They may even have known more about it than we did, because we were just fighting for our lives and for our wives and so on. Because the one thing that angered me, if you like, was when my wife was living in Westron, just close, not far from the airfield, and hot summer morning, and she was making up at her dressing table, putting on her lipstick and so on. And a bomb fell quite close in the garden outside, and a bomb splinter flew in through the open window and smashed her mirror on her dressing table. Well, I thought that was going a bit far and began to take a rather serious interest in the battle from then on, because it might have hit her. And so I became a little angry over that.
Do you think that feeling of anger was really needed in air combat to shoot the enemy down?
No, preferably not, because if you get angry, you're not really in control of yourself, and you've got to approach the whole problem, I think, with a pretty cool head if you're going to survive. The people who got cross and went in like a bull at a gate with anger were the chaps who got killed eventually.
What other qualities do you think are needed by a fighter pilot apart from coolness?
I think good eyesight, speed of reaction, and I think a sense of humour, probably. To an ability to take life as it comes.
Why do you think that's so necessary?
I think if you start taking life too seriously, under those sort of circumstances, this is when people crack up, and we had cases of chaps who cracked up. One who, according to the doctors, when they pulled him off flying, wrote a report for me as flight commander and said that this chap had bailed out so many times and he'd been burnt and he'd everything else. Well, these were all things, events that had happened to other people in the squadron, and he thought they'd all happened to him. And he'd reached the stage where he'd got beads of perspiration on his head. In fact, he was sitting at dispersal with us, and I thought he must have pneumonia or something. He'd got beads of perspiration and looked hot, and hands were shaking. And so I sent him off to the dock and thought, oh, he's just got flu or something. And they said, oh, he's sent a message back saying he's not even to fly his aeroplane back to Biggin Hill from Mansfield. And they were taking him off flying. And he subsequently became a test pilot testing rebuilt aircraft and had a ghastly crash and was badly smashed up and in hospital for about 6 months, but went back to it. He'd got a lot of guts, but not the sort of guts to face the enemy. A different sort of courage.
How were people like that treated by the RAF in those days? Because one hears of this phrase, lack of moral fibre,
yes.
Treated almost as though they needed punishing. Did you find
I think in general they were treated very sympathetically, perhaps more by the understanding medical staff than the pilots, because one naturally felt a bit of suspicion that some chaps were hoping to get an easy ride, get out of combat flying and become an instructor or something and live a quiet life and certainly survive the war. Well, everybody couldn't do that, obviously. And so I think there was perhaps a bit of feeling sometimes that chaps were putting it on a bit.
Do you think any of them were, on reflection?
I very much doubt it. I only had doubts about one person. But the others, I think, were some genuine cases, totally genuine. And probably he was if he reached the stage where he actually started to feel like that and was, after all, letting the team down, the rest of us. We were a squadron. We fought as a team.
Was there a sense of comradeship?
Oh, great sense of comradeship, yes. But you see, later on, when I left 32 Squadron... at the end of August and was posted to 257 Squadron. And 257 had suffered very heavy casualties. Both flight commanders had been killed, and I arrived there with Bob Tuck, Stanford Tuck, the same day, and we both took over the flights from the flight commanders who'd been killed. And of course the morale of the rest of the pilots was pretty low. And then the squadron commander was posted, and Bob was senior of the two flight lieutenants, me and himself, and he took over command of the squadron. And the only way one could sort of whip this squadron into shape, really, was the sort of thing I would do was when we got mixed up with some German bombers, and I set the chap's port engine on fire, and he followed me in and finished it off. And when we got back to base, I said, oh, you shot down your first aircraft, you see. And he said, no, you hit it first. I said, no, I missed it. It was all yours, you see. And you can now paint a little swastika or a cross or something on your aircraft, if you like. And, of course, he was highly delighted, and his confidence zoomed up. He'd shot down his first enemy aircraft. And what did it matter? I mean, you gave away bits of your own score, but it built up the morale of the chaps who were leading. Credit them with a victory here and there and so on, and tell the intelligence officer, yes, I fired but I missed it, and he came in behind and hit it and so on and so forth.
Did you actually paint swastikas on your planes?
Yes, in those days we did. We gave it up after 1940. It was a bit of a game in those days, I think.
Why did you give it up?
I think two reasons. One was, after all, if you, say, Bob Stanford Tuck with, in those days, a large number of victories, a large number of swastikas on his aeroplane, and we were then, after 1940, on the offensive over France, and you were shot up and bailed out of your aircraft and were trying to evade capture. The Germans find your aircraft covered with swastikas, say, well, it's really worth looking for this chap. He's somebody important. We must find him. And so I think that was one of the reasons, probably. You wanted to be more incognito. But the other amusing thing you might amuse people in 1940 at Biggin Hill, the King arrived one day to give some prizes to the chaps, including my CO. And so I was left in charge of the squadron on over at dispersal. And then the King arrived over there by car after he'd hung the medals on the other chaps, and came over, and with him was Stuffy Dowding, a CNC, and I had the chaps lined up and introduced them to the King in succession, and sort of, this is Flying Officer Gardner, sir, and the King would say, how long have you been in the squadron? And 2 years, sir. And how many German aircraft you shot down? 4, sir. And then move on to the next chap, same questions and similar answers. And then we came to Rupert Clark. And how long have you been in the squadron? 2.5 years, sir. And how many aircraft have you shot down? None, sir. But you see, I was in Germany. I was in Norway, rather. And, oh, said the King, in Norway. So there was a bit of a chat about the Norwegian expedition. And we moved on to the next chap. And I heard Stuffy Dowding, who was stumping along behind us, stop in front of Rupert Clark, say, Norway, eh? Why didn't you go down in the Glorious? And Rupert said, oh, I'm terribly sorry, sir. I came back in the destroyer. I found rather mute. Poor old Rupert's never lived it down.
Did Dowding stump along?
No, not really, but he was a towering figure, hands clasped behind his back, rather forbidding looking.
I don't know if you've seen the films or read the books on the Battle of Britain, but do you think that they depict what the atmosphere was like in the squadrons correctly?
Some do, yes. I think the Battle of Britain film that was made was probably as... It was inaccurate in a lot of respects, but it was probably as good as one could make it at the time.
What were the inaccuracies?
Oh, I think little factual inaccuracies and things. Naturally, some of the aircraft were not of the right mark number and that sort of thing, because of course it was difficult to find a number of aircraft of that were incapable of flying that type of thing.
But the films tend to depict a rather light-hearted atmosphere on the part of the
preserve your sanity. But then one... I'm sure I should be the most frightful coward. And so on. But one was always making some sort of crack or comment.
During the Battle of Britain, did you have any sense that you were making history? That this was...
too busy surviving, really, and worrying, of course, about what would happen if we didn't win. Of course, obviously, there would be an invasion, and that was going to be a very uncomfortable thing to have happen to you.
But you felt the fate of Britain was in your hands.
Sure that the Germans never crossed the Channel. It's really as simple as Oh, it was their job in wartime, obviously.
At Biggin Hill and Martlesham Heath and North Weald?
Not really. We suffered a bit later on because that was bombed, and remember, we all dived under the table in the mess for shelter and then rushed outside. Filled it full of soil, and it took me a long time to get all the soil out of the seat. And then Victor became my CO later on during the war at Kenley.
Sent up during the Battle of Britain?
Oh, some were, indeed. They'd had inevitable. Who arrived, and it was we were doing a sweep over France, and Sixth Sense made me look in the mirror and to see that it was full of the biggest and fattest 109 I'd ever seen. And my number two was cutting the corner beautifully, and I thought, oh, he's not. Missing hopelessly. And so I told him to desist over the radio. Gunnery practice, but as I said to him, he should have shot me straight out of the sky. Kent and Essex. A little bit of Suffolk, I suppose. I and several other chaps were posted straight back to Squadron. The number plate is having a rest. The rest, most of us have come back into the battle. Suffered very heavy casualties, indeed. And several of rock bottom, I'm afraid. But unsurprisingly, snipers are being shot down.
Was there anything you could do to raise morale?
And as I said before, preferably, you know, boost their morale with the odd or not, so to speak. Assign the
when masses of German planes came across, were they an awe-inspiring sight?
To see large was quite quite an exciting well, I suppose it virtually tailed off activity because which meant that instead of getting out of bed and looking out the window and saying to whoever was it's a wonderful day today, belting with rain and thick fog. Then, of course, I went off in mid-December and had a rest at an operational
I wonder if we could just jump ahead to after the war when you were involved in the Mulaney murder.
Had command of this Lincoln squadron and there was a new wing commander flying posted in Bell Street and on the 3 squadron station. Most of the chaps were married and lived in married quarters and knew